Chapter 11. Enter the aunts and uncles. The Dodsons were certainly a handsome family, and Mrs. Glegg was not the least handsome of the sisters. As she sat in Mrs. Tulliver's armchair, no impartial observer could have denied that for a woman of 50 she had a very comely face and figure, though Tom and Maggie considered their Aunt Glegg as the type of ugliness. It is true she despised the advantages of costume, for though, as she often observed, no woman had better clothes, it was not her way to wear her new things out before her old ones. Other women, if they liked, might have their best thread lace in every wash, but when Mrs. Glegg died, it would be found that she had better lace laid by in the right-hand drawer of her wardrobe in the spotted chamber than ever Mrs. Wool of St. Ogg's had bought in her life, although Mrs. Wool wore her lace before it was paid for. So of her curled fronts. Mrs. Glegg had doubtless the glossiest and crispest brown curls in her drawers, as well as curls in various degrees of fuzzy laxness, but to look out on the weekday world from under a crisp and glossy front would be to introduce a most dreamlike and unpleasant confusion between the sacred and the secular. Occasionally, indeed, Mrs. Glegg wore one of her third best fronts on a weekday visit, but not at a sister's house. Especially not at Mrs. Tulliver's, who, since her marriage, had hurt her sister's feelings greatly by wearing her own hair, though, as Mrs. Glegg observed to Mrs. Dean, a mother of a family, like Bessie, with a husband always going to law, might have been expected to know better. But Bessie was always weak. So if Mrs. Glegg's front today was more fuzzy and lax than usual, she had a design under it. She intended the most pointed and cutting allusion to Mrs. Tulliver's bunches of blonde curls, separated from each other by a due wave of smoothness on each side of the parting. Mrs. Tulliver had shed tears several times at Sister Glegg's unkindness on the subject of these unmatronly curls, but the consciousness of looking the handsomer for them naturally administered support. Mrs. Glegg chose to wear her bonnet in the house today, united and tilted slightly, of course a frequent practice of hers, when she was on a visit, and happened to be in a severe humor. She didn't know what drafts there might be in strange houses. For the same reason she wore a small sable tippet, which reached just to her shoulders, and was very far from meeting across her well-formed chest, while her long neck was protected by a chevaux de frise of miscellaneous frilling. One would need to be learned in the fashions of those times to know how far in the rear of the Mrs. Glegg's slate-colored silk gown must have been. But from certain constellations of small yellow spots upon it, and a moldy odor about it suggestive of a damp clothes chest, it was probable that it belonged to a stratum of garments just old enough to have come recently into wear. Mrs. Glegg held her large gold watch in her hand with the many double chain round her fingers, and observed to Mrs. Tulliver, who had just returned from a visit to the kitchen, that whatever it might be by other people's clocks and watches, it was gone 12:30 by hers. "I don't know what ails Sister Pullet," she continued. "It used to be the way in our family for one to be as early as another. I'm sure it was so in my poor father's time, and not for one sister to sit 30 minutes before the others came. But if the ways of the family are altered, it shan't be my fault. I'll never be the one to come into a house when all the rest are going away. I wonder at Sister Dean, she used to be more like me. But if you'll take my advice, Bessie, you'll put the dinner forward a bit, sooner than put it back, because folks are late as ought to have known better. Oh dear, there's no fear but what they'll be all here in time, sister," said Mrs. Tulliver, in her mild peevish tone. "Tea the dinner won't be ready till 1:30. But if it's long for you to wait, let me fetch you a cheesecake and a glass of wine." "Well, Bessie," said Mrs. Glegg, with a bitter smile and a scarcely perceptible toss of her head, "I should have thought you'd known your own sister better. I never did eat between meals, and I'm not going to begin. Not but what I hate that nonsense of having your dinner at 1:30, when you might have it at 1. You was never brought up in that way, Bessie." "Why, Jane, what can I do? Mr. Tulliver doesn't like his dinner before 2 o'clock, but I put it half an hour earlier because of you. Yes, yes, I know how it is with husbands, they're for putting everything off. They'll put the dinner off till after tea, if they've got wives as are weak enough to give in to such work. But it's a pity for you, Bessie, as you haven't got more strength of mind. It'll be well if your children don't suffer for it. And I hope you've not gone and got a great dinner for us. Going to expense for your sisters, as I'd sooner eat a crust of dry bread, nor help to ruin you with extravagance. I wonder you don't take pattern by your sister Dean. She's far more sensible. And here you've got 2 children to provide for, and your husband spent your fortnight going to law, and's likely to spend his own too. A boiled joint, as you could make broth of for the kitchen, Mrs. Glegg added, in a tone of emphatic protest, and a plain pudding, with a spoonful of sugar, and no spice, would be far more becoming. With Sister Glegg in this humor, there was a cheerful prospect for the day. Mrs. Tulliver never went the length of quarreling with her, any more than a waterfowl that puts out its leg in a deprecating manner can be said to quarrel with a boy who throws stones. But this point of the dinner was a tender one, and not at all new, so that Mrs. Tulliver could make the same answer as he had often made before. Mr. Tulliver says he always will have a good dinner for his friends, while he can pay for it, she said. And he's a right to do as he likes in his own house, sister. Well, Bessie, I can't leave your children enough out of my savings to keep them from ruin. And you mustn't look to having any of Mr. Glegg's money, for it's well if I don't go first. He comes of a long-lived family, and if he was to die and leave me well for my life, he'd tie all the money up to go back to his own kin. The sound of wheels, while Mrs. Glegg was speaking, was an interruption highly welcome to Mrs. Tulliver, who hastened out to receive Sister Pullet. It must be Sister Pullet, because the sound was that of a four-wheel. Mrs. Glegg tossed her head and looked rather sour about the mouth at the thought of the R-wheel, as he had a strong opinion on that subject. Sister Pullet was in tears when the one-horse chaise stopped before Mrs. Tulliver's door, and it was apparently requisite that she should shed a few more before getting out, for though her husband and Mrs. Tulliver stood ready to support her, she sat still and shook her head sadly as she looked through her tears at the vague distance. "Why, whatever is the matter, sister?" said Mrs. Tulliver. She was not an imaginative woman, but it occurred to her that the large toilet glass in Sister Pullet's best bedroom was possibly broken for the second time. There was no reply, but a further shake of the head, as Mrs. Pullet slowly rose and got down from the chaise, not without casting a glance at Mr. Pullet to see that he was guarding her handsome silk dress from injury. Mr. Pullet was a small man, with a high nose, small twinkling eyes, and thin lips, in a fresh-looking suit of black and a white cravat that seemed to have been tied very tight on some higher principle than that of mere personal ease. He bore about the same relation to his tall, good-looking wife, with her balloon sleeves, abundant mantle, and a large befeathered and beribboned bonnet, as a small fishing smack bears to a brig with all its sails spread. It is a pathetic sight and a striking example of the complexity introduced into the emotions by a high state of civilization, the sight of a fashionably dressed female in grief. From the sorrow of a attendant to that of a woman in large buckram sleeves, with several bracelets on each arm, an architectural bonnet, and delicate ribbon strings, what a long series of gradations! In the enlightened child of civilization, the abandonment characteristic of grief is checked and varied in the subtlest manner, so as to present an interesting problem to the analytic mind. If, with a crushed heart and eyes half blinded by the mist of tears, she were to walk with a too devious step through a door place, she might crush her buckram sleeves too, and the deep consciousness of this possibility produces a composition of forces by which she takes a line that just clears the doorpost. Perceiving that the tears are hurrying fast, she unpins her strings and throws them languidly backward, a touching gesture, indicative, even in the deepest gloom, of the hope in future dry moments when capped strings will once more have a charm. As the tears subside a little, and with her head leaning backward at the angle that will not injure her bonnet, she endures that terrible moment when grief, which has made all things else a weariness, has itself become weary. She looks down pensively at her bracelets, and adjusts their clasps with that pretty studied fortuity which would be gratifying to her mind, if it were once more in a calm and healthy state. Mrs. Pullet brushed each doorpost with great nicety, about the latitude of her shoulders. At that period a woman was truly ridiculous to an instructed eye, if she did not measure a yard and a half across the shoulders, and having done that sent the muscles of her face in quest of fresh tears as she advanced into the parlor, where Mrs. Glegg was seated. "Well, sister, you're late. What's the matter?" said Mrs. Glegg, rather sharply, as they shook hands. Mrs. Pullet sat down, lifting up her mantle carefully behind, before she answered. "She's gone, unconsciously using an impressive figure of rhetoric." "It isn't the glass this time, then," thought Mrs. Tulliver. "Died the day before yesterday," continued Mrs. Pullet, "and her legs was as thick as my body," apostrophe she added, with deep sadness, after a pause. "Tea they tapped her no end o' times, and the water they say you might ha' swum in it, if you'd liked." "Well, Sophie, it's a mercy she's gone, then, whoever she may be," said Mrs. Glegg, with the promptitude and emphasis of a mind naturally clear and decided. "But I can't think who you're talking of, for my part." "But I know," said Mrs. Pullet, sighing, and shaking her head, "and there isn't another such a dropsy in the parish. I know as it's old Mrs. Sutton o' the Twenty Lands." "Well, she's no kin o' yours, nor much acquaintance as I've ever heard of," said Mrs. Glegg, who always cried just as much as was proper when anything happened to her own inn, but not on other occasions. "She's so much acquaintance as I've seen her legs, when they was like bladders. And an old lady as had doubled her money over and over again, and kept it all in her own management to the last, and had her pocket with her keys in under her pillow constant. There isn't many old parishioners like her, I doubt." "And they say she took as much physic as 'ud fill a wagon," observed Mr. Pullet. "Ah," sighed Mrs. Pullet, "she'd another complaint ever, so many years before as he had the dropsy, and the doctors couldn't make out what it was. And she said to me, when I went to see her last Christmas, she said, apostrophe Mrs. Pullet, if ever you have the dropsy, you'll think o' me. Apostrophe she did say so," added Mrs. Pullet, beginning to cry bitterly again, "those were her very words. And she's to be buried o' Saturday, and Pullet's bid to the funeral." "Sophie," said Mrs. Glegg, unable any longer to contain her spirit of rational remonstrance, "Sophie, I wonder at you, fretting and injuring your health about people as don't belong to you. Your poor father never did so, nor your Aunt Frances neither, nor any o' the family as I ever heard of. You couldn't fret no more than this, if we'd heard as our cousin Abbott had died sudden without making his will." Mrs. Pullet was silent, having to finish her crying, and rather flattered than indignant at being upbraided for crying too much. It was not everybody who could afford to cry so much about their neighbors who had left them nothing, but Mrs. Pullet had married a gentleman farmer, and had leisure and money to carry her crying, and everything else to the highest pitch of respectability. "Mrs. Sutton didn't die without making her will, though," said Mr. Pullet, with a confused sense that he was saying something to sanction his wife's tears. "Ours is a rich parish, but they say there's nobody else to leave as many thousands behind them as Mrs. Sutton. And she's left no legacies to speak on, left it all in a lump to her husband's nevy. There wasn't much good I being so rich then," said Mrs. Glegg, "if she'd got none, but husband's kin to leave it to. It's poor work when that's all you've got to pinch yourself for. Not as I'm one of those as I'd like to die without leaving more money out at interest than other folks had reckoned. But it's a poor tale when it must go out o' your own family. I'm sure, sister, said Mrs. Pullet, who had recovered sufficiently to take off her veil and fold it carefully, it's a nice sort o' man as Mrs. Sutton has left her money to, for he's troubled with the asthmy and goes to bed every night at 8 o'clock. He told me about it himself as free as could be one Sunday when he came to our church. He wears a hareskin on his chest and has a trembling in his talk, quite a gentleman sort o' man. I told him there wasn't many months in the year as I wasn't under the doctor's hands. And he said, apostrophe Mrs. Pullet, I can feel for you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that was what he said, the very words. Ah, sighed Mrs. Pullet, shaking her head at the idea that there were but few who could enter fully into her experiences in pink mixture and white mixture, strong stuff in small bottles, and weak stuff in large bottles, damp boluses at a shilling, and draughts at 18 pence. S sister, I may as well go and take my bonnet off now. Did you see as the cap box was put out? She added, turning to her husband. Mr. Pullet, by an unaccountable lapse of memory, had forgotten it, and hastened out, with a stricken conscience, to remedy the omission. They'll bring it upstairs, sister, said Mrs. Tulliver, wishing to go at once, lest Mrs. Gleck should begin to explain her feelings about Sophie's being the first Dodson who ever ruined her constitution with doctor's stuff. Mrs. Tulliver was fond of going upstairs with her sister Pullet, and looking thoroughly at her cap, before she put it on her head, and discussing millinery in general. This was part of Bessie's weakness, that stirred Mrs. Gleck's sisterly compassion. Bessie went far too well dressed, considering, and she was too proud to dress her child in the good clothing her sister Gleck gave her from the primeval strata of her wardrobe. It was a sin and a shame to buy anything to dress that child, if it wasn't a pair of shoes. In this particular, however, Mrs. Gleck did her sister Bessie some injustice, for Mrs. Tulliver had really made great efforts to induce Maggie to wear a leghorn bonnet and a dyed silk frock made out of her Aunt Gleck's, but the results had been such that Mrs. Tulliver was obliged to bury them in her maternal bosom. For Maggie, declaring that the frock smelt of nasty dye, had taken an opportunity of basting it together with the roast beef the first Sunday she wore it, and finding this scheme answer, she had subsequently pumped on the bonnet with its green ribbons, so as to give it a general resemblance to a sage cheese garnished with withered lettuces. I must urge in excuse for Maggie that Tom had laughed at her in the bonnet, and said she looked like an old Judy. And Pullet, too, made presents of clothes, but these were always pretty enough to please Maggie as well as her mother. Of all her sisters, Mrs. Tulliver certainly preferred her sister Pullet, not without a return of preference. But Mrs. Pullet was sorry Bessie had those naughty, awkward children. She would do the best she could by them, but it was a pity they weren't as good and as pretty as Sister Dean's child. Maggie and Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.